We're not experts, and the opinions expressed are solely our own. We'll do our best to be factual and correct any errors that might occur at a later date. The main point of this show is taking the fork in the road towards comedy whenever possible. There will be many forks in the road. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Drinking and Talking Animals. I'm Bob.
I'm Mark. I'm George.
Nice. Did that surprise everyone? I don't know why that was so shocking.
Well, it was kind of like you didn't come in at full force because somebody was moving up the volume.
It came in soft.
It's called producing...
Okay.
Producer well, skill.
It's called production.
We haven't seen a lot of product so far.
Yeah, and today I thought the best way to start this off, first of all, we're going to talk about mambas. So you guys are in for one heck of a show anyway. But since we gave Easter its due, it's only fair we say happy Pasuk to our Jewish friends out there because it's about to be Passover. I believe Passover begins the Monday after you'll hear this episode. So
I believe you're right.
Yeah, and it's also celebrated on different days every spring as determined by the Jewish lunar calendar. But unlike Easter, this goes back to the time of Moses.
Yes.
And is mentioned in the Torah, in Exodus. Does anyone know the 10 plagues that were unleashed on the Egyptians to let my people go?
Let's see, there was frogs.
Yep.
Bloody water.
Bloody water.
That was the first, actually.
Locust.
Water to blood. Yeah, locust was down there a bit.
Jimmy Kimmel.
The Kardashians.
Those are Kardashians. Those are current plagues.
Yeah.
Right. But would have worked on the Pharaoh just as well, I believe. Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Killing of the firstborn.
That is the reason that Passover is called Passover, as a matter of fact. That was the final.
That was,
It goes water to blood, frogs, lice, flies, pestilence of livestock, boils, thunderstorms of hail and fire, locusts, 3 days of darkness, and then the death of the firstborn son.
Yeah,
boils were my favorite.
So basically...
Moses
told the Israelites to slaughter sheep and goats as a sacrifice, smear the blood on the doorpost outside of their dwellings, and the angel of death would pass by their abode and only kill the firstborn sons of the Egyptians, and that happened to affect the Pharaoh as well, and that was the final straw, as a matter of fact. And that's the reason that there were 10 plagues, is after each plague was unleashed, it was appealed to the Pharaoh to let the Israelites go.
Got enough?
Right. And also, the cool thing about it was each plague was also going in direct opposition to an Egyptian god. And they're referred to as magicians in the Bible. Those are the people that, you know, would kind of do parlor tricks and stuff to make the Egyptian people think that their gods were real and this and that. So... you know, the true God showed all
the
of those puny coin, gods.
Coin behind know. The ear.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, God hulked up on all of the other Egyptian gods and basically said, well, check this out, y'all. You know, it was some pretty dastardly stuff that went down there. But anyway, that was how we do. But he didn't send any snakes.
No.
Which, you know, there's some crazy snakes in that part of the world. So
oh, yeah. The asp.
You know. I don't know why he didn't.
I mean, I'm thinking, you send me frogs, I'm going to eat cool dinner.
Yeah.
Frog leg.
Well, Moses did turn his staff into a snake.
Yeah, he did.
He's got that going for him. Anyway.
I want to give a shout out.
Do it.
To Moses?
To Jeff Shefflett.
Oh, yeah. Jeff Shefflett.
Good friend of the show's who's going through some health issues.
Yeah. And a good friend of the reptile community as a whole.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, hang in there, buddy.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, strokes ain't no fun.
No. Mm-mm. And don't quit taking your high blood pressure meds.
Yeah. That's a good thing for all of us to remember. Yeah. I think if you get to over 40, 45, you're probably going to taste one at some point. Like, I've been on them for a little while. You know, one of my goals is getting off of those bad boys this year. We'll see how that goes, but, you know, it's a goal nonetheless.
I'm going to say I'm fortunate and have not had to.
That is crazy lucky.
I'm like 25 years deep.
You are a freaking genetic masterpiece, Mark.
The high blood pressure ran in my family, so
I'm
like almost 30 years I've been.
Well, we know that you caught all the recessive genes, George. We can see your hair. Is anyone else in your, does red hair run in your family?
Nope.
Really? So you were totally an anomaly.
He was the mailman.
No wonder he likes printing.
No, there's a lot of Nordic genes, so I'm the only one that got the correct ones.
Right.
Eric, he's a descendant of Eric the Red.
Sounds right, too. He could probably wield a battle hammer or axe and, you know, screw stuff up as you do. Row a ship.
Yeah, that's probably what I do.
Yeah, that ain't what he's drawing.
Yeah. Stroke.
Slave boy.
Wait. That's not going that way.
Yeah, that just makes me think of Billy Squire anyway. Right. Stroke me.
Stroke.
Oh, yeah.
Stroke.
What are we drinking today? Because this stuff's delicious.
We are drinking Guinness Zero.
Mm-hmm.
With an ABV of 0 and an IBU of 50. The hops are Galena, Nugget, and Target, and the malts are roasted barley.
Target.
Huh. It is actually, it's a hop we don't see a lot over here. It's a more European Irish hop. Mm. Used in a lot of Irish beers.
They do like the dark beers over there, that's for sure.
Well, I don't know. Harp beer is not dark, and it's pretty good.
It does have a more aggressive
profile
to the flavor. But, you know, I think that part of the world in general, they like their things leaning a little more on the bitter side of things, you know, because you got all your English bitters, and I'm sure that flows
English
over.
Bitters, surprisingly, are not bitter at all.
I've not had like a an few, IPA. But, right. Well, they also have some completely garbage beers over part of the
we
world,
won't go
too.
Into
but,
there.
Yeah, that's it.
It's like Australia.
Everywhere.
It's like
Shamrock Light.
No. Yeah. Right. They probably did.
And then for a snack, we're doing hoppy.
Old style.
Spicy sriracha flavored peas.
Ice.
Spicy
chili
pea.
Garlic flavored green peas.
Mmm. Yeah.
I kind of like them.
They're not bad.
Mm-mm.
They're definitely not wasabi.
No, but they got a flavor profile all their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, crunchy, spicy.
So, how about a break?
Well, I guess we can do socials, too.
Oh, we can do that first.
Yeah.
Whatever.
We got Drinking and Talk Animals, Instagram and Facebook. Find us on YouTube. Just search for Drinking Talk Animals. Like and subscribe there. You know, smash, all that stuff.
Smash.
It's a good place to go to smash. On the YouTube. Yeah. Mac, you ever smashed watching YouTube?
this show,
it's more of a YouTube and chill.
Not specifically this show.
Wow.
Yeah, just keep it on in the background.
Wait, this is the
like,
funny
this
part
is really getting my motor
this
running.
Might be the only audio format that I wouldn't be able to smash to.
Wow.
Well, you never know till you try.
Tried. It could get some motors running.
Think of it as a challenge.
Yeah. The gauntlet has been laid.
Well, Max is hoping to get laid, but that's a...
Exactly. The gauntlet
gets laid all the time.
There, Max? Hey, are you going to go watch that, what's that new Henry Cavill movie that's getting ready to come out?
That movie looks like garbage.
I don't know.
Gentleman Warfare or something
like
that?
Yeah, League of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Yeah. I'm out on Henry Cavill. I'm not a big fan.
It looks like it's going to be a totally different role for him, so, you know.
Whatever.
I mean, you know he's moving into Marvel.
Who cares? Marvel's dead. Down, burn the mouse. Burn the mouse. Piss the Disney down. Just to the ground.
Marvel's dead to me.
They're going to own this show soon.
Really? I hope.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I just finished The Mandalorian.
Nice.
I
took you a while.
Well, jeez. We just got Disney Plus, so.
Yeah. It was pretty cool when they killed that big-ass worm, though.
Yeah. Good right series, back. People. Hey, we're back!
Yeah, anyway, you know, as we do, we go down our side roads all the time of cooking and this and that, and George and I have side conversations all the time about cooking techniques, and I don't know if we've ever mentioned
I do have
this,
a cooking question once you're finished.
Oh, George makes pretty much all pan of his fry. Own salad dressings. I don't know if we've ever talked about that, but
yeah,
George is a very excellent cook, and he wouldn't rate himself that way, but... Anyway, we were talking, and I asked him if he cooks with wooden spoons, because I used to cook with a lot of wooden spoons, and I got a hair, and I bought these freaking silicone spoons, so I got one for each of you to try, and even if you don't use
spoons I use silicone to cook, spoons at home all the time.
Right.
Or silicone.
These are my favorites. I had.
Are we throwing one at Max?
Yeah. I don't know what the brand even means. It's like Larisco. It was just one of those brands you find
Larisco.
On. Yeah, Larisco. It's one of those brands you find on Amazon. But they're a nice length. It's 12 inches, you know. So
we all like 12 right. inch.
They're black like the Mamba.
So no, it's not.
It has a broad right. head on it.
Yeah, it does. It's. If it was coffin-shaped, it would be perfect for the Mamba, but I couldn't find a coffin-shaped spoon. But I love these things, and you're not going to pick up any off flavors afterwards. They rinse off well.
Which is my biggest grievance with the wooden spoon. It's like, just suck on one, and it'll change your opinion of them.
And it,
right.
It picks up color.
Right.
And I quit using... I'm slowly but surely switching everything over. All my spatulas are silicone.
Right. Yeah, it's an excellent surface for, you know, grilling. And mostly, you know, it's just like I use it to saute onions. Anything you've like kind of cubed up and you need to keep stirring around in your pan, you can't use it for everything. But I even stir like pasta water. You know, you
at least
can
you can taste. You can taste with
taste.
This too,
right? You can taste with it.
That's
right.
A good sauce tasting thing.
But anyway, it was mostly like a matter of it's hard to find a decent like length in a cooking spoon as well.
Yes.
And once I got these in my hands, they sell them in 4 packs of black, and they also have multicolored ones. So I got that pack was like I think it was red, black, blue, and something else. I can't remember, but. Anyway, I think they're great. They're affordable if you're looking to upgrade to something beyond wood. And I was telling George that I had a bunch of these old bamboo spoons I got for Megan at one point that were all carved out with Harry Potter stuff on them. And I was using one of them to make, like, a stew. So, you know, you get your
spell dissolved it.
Well, you get all your fond built up on the bottom. And then when you add your liquid to deglaze, you're trying to get all that stuff up off the bottom. And I was stirring with this bamboo spoon and I pulled it out and a solid probably quarter to half inch of the tip was missing. So I told George that we had panda stew because we, I think, ate a little bit of bamboo.
A little extra fiber.
Right. So anyway, I just thought it was cool. We're not affiliated with this company at all.
No, but
I would love to be. You know, we should probably come up with an affiliate link to some of this stuff. Because
I'm slowly but surely transferring everything over to silicone.
Yeah.
When I can find things that I think are going to work for me.
And I think, you know, at this point, if you are still listening, hit us on our socials for real. And, you know, if you'd like to hear a little bit more of maybe an episode dedicated to, like, I've talked about doing something like regional delicacies, you know, in the United States or abroad, where they might, you know, get into cooking some animals we're not really familiar with, or even here, eating some things in different parts of this country, like fried brain sandwiches and scrapple.
Scrapple's a very interesting thing.
I've had brain tacos, and I'd have to say it's not something I'd go back to the well on very often, but I can say I had it.
Actually, I liked it, and I've not had scrapple.
Yeah,
I want to try it.
Well, I know brains and eggs is a regional thing in some parts of the world.
I think brains and nuts would be the way to go.
Rocky oysters.
Yeah.
Rocky Mountain oysters and brains.
They go together. They go together all the time.
That's true. That is very true. Let's see.
I have a cooking question.
Oh, that's right.
For George here.
Yeah.
So I bought a 2-bone in prime rib.
That's what we had last night.
Oh yeah, perfect. Because I'm gonna attempt to cook it tonight. And what would the master?
How much time are you gonna have?
Oh, all evening.
All night long.
So I'd say 225 for about 3 hours.
225 for 3 hours.
Yeah. Do you have a temperature probe?
No.
Do you have any way to take an internal temperature of a piece of meat?
Oh, I could definitely get a thermometer. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
If it's about 6 pounds, like the one that I had,
yeah,
then it's going to be about 3 hours, and okay. Then when that's over, take it out. Let it rest a little bit. Mm. Cook whatever else you're going to have go with it. Yeah. And then put it in the oven at 500 until it gets crispy.
Mm.
Which will be about 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
And then eat it.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And depending on, and you're going to probe it depending on what temperature, how rare you want it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want it rare, go at 130. Mm. Or 230, I'm sorry.
I think the 3 hours will get you a little past rare.
130.
Okay. No, 130 for rare.
130. I'd even pull it.
129, 128.
And I think the thing about reverse sear, too, is you really want to pull it somewhere around like 125 because it'll carry over a little bit.
Yeah.
So as soon as you pull it out of the oven, crank it to 500.
Yeah.
And as soon as your oven hits 500,
throw it back in.
That's why you're also going to, like, if you're going to stir fry anything else to be your sides or whatnot.
Because you want it to rest a little bit before it goes into the oven
for
the crisping.
But it's reverse sear. That's the method that we're talking about here, and it's definitely the way to go. Cool. You'll have a fantastic product. And don't be scared to really pack salt on
the
outside.
Season the crap
heavily.
Out of it.
Yeah.
Like salt falling off of it.
Okay. Or even do something like mustard on the outside.
Yeah, like a binder.
For a binder, I would do a Dijon or something like that.
Like as much Johnny's, as much Johnny's will stick on it.
Yeah.
That kind of.
But yeah, okay. And that'll hold the seasoning on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you're not going to get, it won't penetrate through the whole thing. So, you know, the only flavor you're really going to get is the outside edges. I mean, you can eat the heels, but I tend to actually just kind of shave the heels off of both sides.
Mm.
That part is the most delicious. That's almost like the chef's taste, really.
That's my favorite part.
Right. So I usually pick on the very end, but once you get past that, you'll be able to slice yourself some nice, you know, you can slice it as thick as you can.
Some nice prime rib.
Well, right. With 2 bones, you can just cut it in half.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
1 bone for you, one bone for her.
Pound and a half a piece.
Yeah. Just eat a brontosaurus.
I ate so much meat last night. I when I took a shower, I felt like I had tallow rubbed in my hair.
Nice. Luckily, I can get us through to the genus pretty quickly today because we're going to tell you about all mambas. The order is Squamata, and we've been here a lot. So just as a reminder, Squamatus is a Latin word that means scaly or having scales. It's the largest order of reptiles, and beyond snakes, it also contains lizards and over 11,500 species, making it the second largest order of extant living vertebrates. Fish is the other ones. We talk about them all the time. I think it's...
Fitties.
Yeah, fish. The family is Elapidae, and in ancient Greek, elops means sea fish. And how that makes sense to whoever named it, I don't know, but believe it or not, I didn't look into it. But if I had to guess, I'd say it's because some of these species probably live in water or are found in water. So, you know, and we're also talking about an order here with 11,500 species.
Water snakes.
Right.
They're not, none of them, they're not afraid of water.
Yeah, these are not water snakes. So
no, but
it's
no,
just,
definitely,
it's just weird.
Definitely so, not.
Yeah. The more important thing to know about this family is that the snakes it contains have permanently erect fangs.
Yeah.
Permanent erection fangs.
Because right. They're rear fanged.
Yeah. Well, front fanged, aren't they?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Mamba's front fanged.
Oh, Mamba's. Yeah, they are. Okay.
Snake
fangs. Because the rear fanged ones also have erect fangs.
Yeah. Many members of this family will also flare out their necks during threat displays, so it won't surprise you to know that, with a couple of exceptions, cobras are a member of this family as well. That takes us to our genus today, and it's Dendroaspis. Dendron is the ancient Greek word for tree, and aspis can mean shield, but can also mean cobra or simply snake.
Or just asp.
Yeah, and shield, the way it applies is when they flatten their neck, it reminded them of a shield that, like, a warrior would hold. So, you know, you got that going.
So aside from that, the word rhododendron, the plant, the shrub, it has effectively a shield around its base where its leaves are poisonous and it kills all the other things around it. Mm. It's sort of like a shield, basically, around the plant. Right. I wonder, is that the same?
I don't know what rhoda means. So,
But the dendron?
Dendron just means tree. So,
wasn't she on the Mary Tyler Moore show? Yeah, and had her own series, Rhoda.
But what did you say about the shield part?
The shield is that comes from aspis, so that's another. But it can also it means shield in one form, but it was also their word for cobra.
I was over imagining,
or just snake in general. So
yeah,
right. And let's see. We'll start there, and we'll get a lot deeper later on, but the species for the black mamba is Dendroaspis polylepsis. You'd think that means black, but it means many scales, from poly and lepsis for scale. It would also make sense to cover where as we move on, so hopefully Mark can decode his notes to do it this way, and it would be a great time to pause to bring up a map of Africa if you'd like to have a better idea of where these snakes hang out on the continent.
Could possibly.
Yeah. I also think...
If our producer was paying attention.
Yeah. I also think he could make it really easy on all of us if he just left it to the lower half of Africa for all of them, because that's where we'd find them.
Pretty much.
So, right, pull up a map of Africa, draw a line through the middle horizontally, and look down. That's where you're going to find most of your mambas.
They're not going to kill you in Nebraska.
And for that reason, probably why I wouldn't really want to visit the lower half of Africa after reading about these bastards.
Well, Sub-Sahara Africa.
Right, Sub-Saharan, correct. Let's see. And, you know, also, if he did go more specific, we're not going to deprive him of telling us, because he wrote all of his notes longhand, and he has been since we started. So, you know, that's a lot of work, everybody. He needs to read what he wrote.
With no punctuation.
There it is. So basically, anything not light green, if you're looking at the map that's posted now.
Right. Anything not light green. Yeah. So, like, maroon, red, but...
Dark
you know,
green.
That part was more for our listeners to pause and pull up a map. So you know,
well,
it's
from the
either way. You can watch it on YouTube, too. Hopefully more people are.
Yeah. It's from continue on, sir.
Savannah down.
Yeah. So black mamba. You can find them all the way from sub-Saharan?
It's basically sub-Saharan in a large part of Africa.
Nice.
We're just going to go sub-Saharan.
All right.
They're one of the largest ranging of the mambas.
Nice. Next, we have the Dendroaspis angusticeps, or eastern green mamba. In Latin, angustus means narrow, and seps is an abbreviated form of caput, and that means head. So, narrow head. Also, this snake and the rest are mostly green, do prefer trees, and we'll talk about some exceptions to that later, but where would we find that particular species?
Coastlines of southern Africa and East Africa, from Kenya south through Tanzania. Northern Mozambique, and an isolated and genetically distinct population is found in South Africa from the extreme northeast part of Eastern Cape along the KwaZulu natal coastline into southern Mozambique.
Mozambique. Noise.
A lot of South Africa that has trees.
Yeah. Them. That's important here. Moving on, we have the Dendroaspis viridis. And since I just mentioned
that's
green.
Viridis.
Either way. Viridis is the Latin adjective for the color green.
Yeah.
The common name for these is the Western Green Mamba. Where don't I want to go to find these, Mark?
On your arm.
Oh, man. That's the one that, for some reason, I didn't write that down. They're basically on the west coast of Africa in a very small area.
Yeah. Well, I guess that would make sense why their common name is Western Green Mamba.
Yes.
Finally, we have the Dendroaspis jamesoni, or Jameson's Mamba, and here we have two subspecies. The epithet for this species was given by Thomas Traill in honor of Robert Jameson, who was a contemporary of his and the Regius Professor of Natural History at the University of Edinburgh. Here, the species are also divided by east and west, with the western and nominate subspecies being the Dendroaspis jamesoni.
Yeah.
The eastern is the DJ Kaimosai and is huge in the EDM scene. Like,
DJ Kaimosai.
DJ. It's actually because the first specimen was collected in the Kaimosai Forest, and why wouldn't the Eastern Jameson's Mamba have been discovered in Western Kenya? And I won't leave Mark in a pickle on that one, because it does make sense if you know that Kenya lies to the east of Central Africa, and the Jameson's Mamba ranges across this region, but I'll let him tell you the rest.
Well, basically, I didn't break it down into subspecies, but Central Africa and West Africa, and parts of East Africa.
Yeah. And that's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it was weird.
It was very weird and spotty. Right.
Yeah, because you basically have Eastern Green, Western Green, and then when you get to Jameson's, you have Jameson's Eastern and Jameson's Western. So, you know, it's a funky way to do it, but that's what we were given by science. So, anyway, moving on to some characteristics, I'm not going to go crazy. I'm just going to stick to some basic sizing, colorization, and a little bit of morphology.
What?
I'm skipping scalation completely because it's way too technical to the point of boring, and I doubt anyone listening really wants to know the name of every single scale on the head. And trust me, there is a name for pretty much every single scale on a snake's head.
What? Wah, wah. Yeah. If we were doing species, if we were describing a new species, it would be important, but we're not.
Right. True. And the names are crazy technical. It's cool if you get like an up close picture of a snake's head. They're divided up kind of like a stained glass window. It's really
like a turtle shell.
It's really cool the way the scales sit and what they're for.
And that,
if I remember,
that was significant in the king cobra too, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's a name for
basically
like one,
any
the
snake,
one on the center of its head.
Right. And this stuff is all kind of generalized, right? I don't know that you've got a black mamba there, Max, but
that's not a black mamba.
It's a cool looking snake.
Yeah,
that's a green mamba.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a black mamba.
See the inside of the mouth, Max?
And the doll.
That's why it's called a black mamba.
The doll's eyes.
Right. Yeah, doll's eyes.
There's another one.
If there's a couple of pieces of advice I could give to all of our listeners out there today, it would be this. If you're in the lower half of Africa and you see a snake, get away from that snake and don't forget to look up.
Yeah.
That's important, too. George will probably tell us at some point about the video he watched of green mambas cruising through at incredible speeds about 6 feet off the ground because these things are agile sons of bitches. They will be in your face like, before you can even
like,
think.
Like but, swimming through the trees.
Right. It's incredible. And luckily, most of them are pretty shy. But, you know, you get in their space, they're not scared to defend it.
They're not one of the ones that get a lot of bites.
Right.
Yeah, it was more running away when
unlike
I saw
the
it.
Black mamba.
Right. Let's see. Here we go. And using the same order as we did the species in, we'll start with the black mamba. They are the second longest venomous snakes in the world after the king cobra and the longest snake in Africa. Mature individuals can easily exceed 6 feet.
The longest venomous snake.
Yeah, venomous. Okay. Right. Mature individuals can easily exceed 6.5 feet, and specimens of 14 to 15 feet have been reported, and they'll easily reach around 10 feet. Despite the name, the skin color commonly varies from gray to dark brown, and juveniles are paler than adults. There is, however, a wide variance in colors, including olive, yellowish brown, khaki, and even a matte silver that they referred to as gunmetal. So,
gunmetal.
Gunmetal snake would be a badass name for a snake, too, by the way. Some have a purplish sheen on their scales, and some will occasionally have a dark mottling toward the tail end that can appear as diagonal crossbands. So, a little bit of patterning, not a whole lot. They all have grayish white underbellies. What is black is the inside of their mouths, and that's something you really don't want to see up close.
Oh, hell no.
If you see that, they feel threatened, and you're the one that's in trouble.
In the face.
Yeah, in the face. They're long, slender snakes with appropriately coffin-shaped heads, because they will put you in one. They have a bit of a pronounced eye ridge with medium-sized eyes. I already mentioned the fixed fangs, and just Google yourself a nice picture of a mamba skull to get the idea here. The technical term for this is proteroglyphus, and that roughly means front fanged. The fangs are shorter than I would have expected, at around 1/4 inch long, but I don't ever want to see them up close anyway.
No.
Yeah, you don't. Weight was a hard thing to pin down. But in the end, the best way I could piece it together would be to say that you're probably looking at somewhere around 2 pounds for every 3 feet of snake, give or take, depending on maturity. So that was the easiest way to break that down.
Like 3 to 9 pounds, something like that.
Right. That's a great range for them there. And it would be, you know, anywhere from 3 to 15 feet. So add 2 pounds for every foot, or every 2 feet.
You wouldn't want to meet a 15-foot long
one.
That's
hard. Right, you don't. Moving along to the eastern green mamba, we have an elusive snake that likes to stay hidden in trees. Green is a great color for that, and this is a behavior, but they're known to ambush hunt versus pursue. But they also have birds and other snakes to worry about seeing, as they'll rarely get longer than 8 feet. So they do have more predators than a black mamba would, and they're quite a bit more slender than
they're
not as heavy bodied because they are arboreal.
Looks like a vine.
Yeah, they do. Males average about 6 feet, and females average 1/2 foot longer than that. Adults have bright green upper parts and will occasionally have some isolated yellow scales with a pale yellow-green underbelly. So every once in a while, bam, yellow scale. They're just kind of scattered throughout.
What?
Right. Juveniles are blue-green, but change to that bright green at some point after reaching 2.5 feet long. So it's dependent upon size. Heads are still coffin-shaped, but longer and more slender. Insides of the mouth can be white or bluish-white. With a scientific name that means green, the western green mamba is exactly that. These guys average between 4.5 to 7 feet, and the largest can again get up to about 8 feet long. They are bright green, but fade to yellow or orange near the tail. The scales have very prominent black edges that give them a really cool kind of stained glass window appearance. If you look up close at these snakes' heads, these are probably one of the coolest looking snakes in terms of what you see from the head, because each scale is so defined by black It's really badass. I mean, stained glass, I say stained glass, and that's exactly what I thought when looking at a lot of pictures of especially this species. It's neat. Finally, we have the Jameson's Mamba, and the biggest difference is that the eastern subspecies, the Kaimosai, have black tails. The western nominate subspecies have pale green or yellow tails. They range on average from about 5 feet to just over 7, but can reach a maximum length of about 8 foot 8 inches. So,
and that tends to be more in captivity on most of these.
Mm-hmm. Adults are dull green across the back that blends to a pale green towards the underbelly, and these scales are also edged in black. Necks, throats, and some underparts are cream to yellowish. They have narrow, elongated heads with small eyes, and that was a big difference between other mambas, is most of them were described as medium. These were strictly small-eyed snakes. And by the way, all of these species can flatten their necks a bit like a cobra and have those fixed fangs that we talked about. Is there anything else you'd like to say about fangs, Mark? Because you are our resident snake man.
No, I mean, they're short and they're hollow.
Right. And they're grooved, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do have some
grooving. They do have a groove. Well.
And the one thing that I skipped, and because I didn't think it was that important, but these snakes really do have what you'd consider a tail, kind of after their guts end, and the percentages were different for every species, but what you're seeing in total length, and it was actually a way that they can determine kind of how old a snake is, too, is that it was anywhere from, say, 20 or just under 20% to about 25% of these snakes is just tail.
Yeah, But again, right. When you're talking arboreals, that mm-hmm. really comes in handy because they can actually use them to grab on.
Right.
To hold on to branches and stuff to move around.
Right. Well, speaking of grabbing on, you know what time it is. Max, and if this is your first episode out there, everybody, you're about to find out something you probably never wanted to know about snake junk.
Come on over and suck my venom. I'm a big, long, slithery sex machine today. I'm gonna put my fangs deep, deep into you. It's time for mating with Mark.
You know, that's not what Kaylee said.
Hey-o.
All right. Yeah. So.
She likes that segment.
Yeah, I'll bet she does not. Now, the Black Mamba's breeding period is between September and February. The Eastern Green is April to June. The Western Green is October to November, and the Jameson's is December to February, which is kind of weird considering they live in the same general, but some are north of the Sahara or of the equator, some are south of the equator, so you're going to have different. The main thing is it's always right about just into a rainy season.
Jameson should be around St. Patrick's Day.
I used to have it.
Now, they are solitary except during breeding season. The male leaves, the female leaves a pheromone trail for the males to follow. Yep. Now, the males engage in a battle for dominance. Rival males compete by wrestling, attempting to subdue each other by intertwining and pushing down with their necks.
It's like a boys' locker room.
They call it high. They call it wrestling.
Yeah.
Snake wrestling.
The victor then slithers up to the female's dorsal side while flicking her with his tongue.
Ayo. That's hot.
Now, if she is in the mood, she will lift up her tail and stay still. He will then coil around the posterior end
come
of
and
the
get
earth
it.
And align his tail ventral laterally and insert one of the hemipenes, because yes, they do have two.
That's right.
I still don't know how they choose.
Cloaca. intromission,
whichever side you saddle up to,
last more than 2 hours. With them laying motionless, except for the occasional spasm from the male.
Don't move, don't move, don't move.
Yeah. Like, don't move, don't move. It touched my right peen. I think George has asked the same question every time we talk about snakes. It's like, is there a dominant peen? Like, no, inquiring minds want to know.
Some of them are left, some of them are right.
Yeah.
Some are lefties, some are righties.
Yeah, and if you ever get a severe war injury, you've got one in the
You're still able to do it, yeah.
Right. I got the lower one blowed off.
Right. Yeah, my peen hit a landmine back in Nam.
Now, she lays her eggs 30 to 50 days later under decaying vegetation for the black mambas, and Greens and Jamesons do it in holes in the trees.
Yeah.
Now, they lay somewhere between 10 and 25 eggs and hatch out in about 3 months.
So this is a one-on-one then with these snakes, huh?
Yeah.
It's not like a group. Like
it's not a group.
Like
The dominant male gets her. The same thing happens with rattlesnakes and cobras. Mm. It's the dominant gets her.
Gotcha.
Now, they hatch out at between, depending on the species, between 13 and 24 inches, and they're sexually mature at about 3 years. Now, greens can live to 14 years, and this is both species of the greens, with the record in captivity being almost 19, and blacks 11
years. Well, that means they can live to 19 then.
With actually hitting 20 years, and actually Jameson's averages about 9 years, and the average, I think the record was something like 10.
Nice.
And whiskey. It was a short, sweet breeding.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
Well, they all kind of do it the same way.
Well, yeah.
The coolest thing, I think, you know, that you can look up when it comes to this is any of the male dominance fights. If you can find those on YouTube, they're awesome.
I mean, they are out there.
Seriously,
yeah.
They are up off the
ground.
They're
literally wrapped around each other, and they're just trying to force one down to the ground, and whoever gets one down to the ground, the other guy's out of there.
Right.
That lifting up off the ground, that's definitely a thing they use as a dominance threat thing.
Yeah.
And even the arboreal ones head to the ground to do that.
Huh.
That I did not just know. Well, yeah, because there's more.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're doing that up in the trees, you're going to fall out of the damn tree.
Well, and when you think of like a black mamba that's 12 feet long, lifting a third of its body up, it's 4 feet off the ground.
Right.
That is going to strike you in the face.
Right.
That's...
Yeah, and the cool thing is that it's actually a very well-documented, simple dominance display.
Yeah.
They don't bother with effing around biting each other because they're immune to each other's venom anyway. So there's no point to getting all rough and tumble about it.
Oh, you bit me with your little fangs.
Yeah. Ooh, your quarter-inch fangs did so much damage to my body. Right. You know, that was the thing that I thought was neat, though, is they're not even trying to damage each other at all. It's just
it's just a pushing.
It's who can force who down. It literally is like Indian leg wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you've ever done that, everybody. Yeah.
If you were just a penis.
Yeah. Walrus wrestling if you're Max. Which is quite a display if you've ever seen that in the wild as well. I have. I've had the pleasure.
You've had the pleasure of seeing that live.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want to know about that live. Hey.
It's pretty awesome.
What's a snake's favorite dance?
The mamba.
You got it. What do you call
that was easy today.
What do you call a comedian mamba?
Don't know.
Hysterical.
Hysterical.
What do you call a mamba that works for a government?
Don't know.
A civil serpent.
Oh, nice.
What do you call a mamba that's just shed?
Don't know.
Snaked.
Snaked. That's like snorting. Is there a name for a group of mambas, or did they not need one in this case?
I didn't find one.
Yeah, I wouldn't think they'd need one. Because they don't den up or anything in groups,
The only time they come together where you may see more than one is during breeding season.
Right. And even then, it's, you know, it's either dominance male on male or it's breeding male on female. But one on one. I wanna play that game tonight. All right.
Some behavior.
Behavior. They hunt, they kill, they eat. That's what these snakes are good at, and they do it well. I found that it was way more interesting to go down the venom trail here today. So if you guys have some other behaviors you want to talk about, jump in now, jump in whenever.
I got some folklore for later. But
folklore.
No. Folklore.
Hell yeah, folklore. And I'll promise I'll do my best to not repeat things here. So when a species has a venom I've already described, I'll just say that they have it and move along. Black mamba venom doesn't contain protease enzymes, and there's no local swelling or necrosis associated with a black mamba bite. The fun part is they bite repeatedly and rapidly, so multiple punctures are likely, and they can deliver about 100 to 120 milligrams of venom on average per bite. The maximum recorded was 400 milligrams.
Stuck in like a sewing machine, like just...
Right. And if you wanted to kind of think of this in a in an eyedropper way, if you milked a mamba for venom, you'd usually get about, say, 8 drops per fang, and it only takes 2 of those drops to kill a fully grown human male or a person of any gender. Right. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Two-spirit.
They'll bite you. Yeah, right. You can be a two-spirit... anything.
Get and, 1 drop each.
Right. Doesn't matter. They bite you, you're dead. The murine median lethal dose is fun to define, and we'll need to break it into 2 parts. Murine means relating to or affecting mice. The median lethal dose is a toxicology term abbreviated with a capital LD and the number 50 as a small subscript denoting 50%. LD usually means something else, but today it means lethal dose.
For a mouse, right?
Yeah, it means long dong.
The belly-up right. Belly-up mouse is...
Right. So the value is determined by the dose required to kill half the members of a tested population after a specified test duration. So if you've got 100 mice, they determine the LD50, based on how much venom it takes to kill 50% of the 100 mice.
Half of them are dead. Half of them are just really high.
Yeah, and what we're talking about here is injecting the venom into mice in laboratory settings. So this is a little bit gruesome, but they need to know because these suckers kill a lot of people. So to develop a good anti-venom, they need to know the lethality of this venom, and they do.
Yeah, especially on the black.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a story that a little kid in South Africa got pricked by a dead mamba fang. And within like 15 minutes, he was unconscious and they were on their way to hospital to get anti-venom.
Right.
And that's how bad.
Well, basically, if you don't do anything within 45 minutes... You're toast, and you'll be dead in 7 to 15 hours.
Right. Yeah. And long story short here, the black mamba venom is lethal at 0.32 to 33 milligrams per kilo in mice. The venom is neurotoxic, which affects nerve tissue, as you'd imagine, and symptoms become apparent within 10 minutes. Early signs that you're in deep crap include a metallic taste, drooping eyelids, and the gradual onset of bulbar palsy symptoms. I'll skip the technical stuff and just say that bulbar palsy means you aren't going to be able to breathe much longer.
No.
If that wasn't bad enough, you can also suffer from constricted pupils, blurred vision, tingling skin, slurred speech, difficulty swallowing, shortness of breath, difficulty handling saliva, absent gag reflex, muscle twitching, involuntary movements, vertigo, loss of consciousness, and respiratory paralysis. But wait, there's more.
Yeah.
Nausea and vomiting, abdominal pain, diarrhea, sweating, and why not throw in some goosebumps just for shits and giggles?
I also read that there was a moment of euphoria, too. There was like a little bit of, I'm kind of high.
There's a tingling sensation, and I think we're going to talk about that. I don't remember if it's for this snake or maybe another, but, and Mark was just talking about this, a bite can collapse the average human in 45 minutes, and without anti-venom, you're on a road to respiratory failure and death within 7 to 15 hours.
Yeah.
But untreated, most of the time, you're dead in like 40 minutes. Yeah. So this is some potent crap, and a lot of times it's not so much with the black mamba. You're going to be sort of close to hospitals. The greens are a fun, different story.
Well, yeah, because they're not found real close to a lot of civilization.
Yeah. A proteome is the term for the protein profile of a venom, and in 2015, black mamba venom was assessed. It has 41 distinct proteins and... one nucleoside, which would require a medical degree for me to explain. Anyway, the two major families of toxic agents at work here are dendrotoxins I and K, three finger toxins, and the very potent alpha neurotoxin. Three finger toxins made me laugh every time I read it. I was like,
I understand two finger ones.
Right. But... yeah, it's when you throw that third one in there. That's the shocker.
Yo.
Yeah, two finger venoms or toxins are fine. Three fingers are a shocker, right? Rather than spewing out a bunch of stuff I don't really understand, let's just say that these things fuck you up and shut you down by affecting the potassium channels that form the backbone of your nervous system and functions. The composition of black mamba venom is very different from that of the other species and is probably related to their preference to small land mammals as prey versus the birds and tree-dwelling creatures that make up the bulk of the diet of the other species. The eastern green mamba has the least toxic venom, and this is the angusticeps, if you recall. Each bite can contain 60 to 95 milligrams, and in mice, the LD50 was 1.3 milligrams per kilogram via IV injection. Least toxic doesn't mean safe, though, because it only takes 18 to 20 milligrams to take down a human. And even at the low end, they're giving you three times that dose with every bite. The venom here does contain protease, and that will cause pain and swelling at the injection site, just like, your average tetanus shot.
Yep.
And that will progress to localized necrosis and gangrene.
If you live that long.
Right. The symptoms of a bite from the eastern green is similar to the black mamba, but without the paralyzing effects, and you can toss in an irregular heartbeat and convulsions. So that's fun. I won't bore you with the proteome profile for all of these, but the main bad stuff here, again, are the three-finger toxins, which you should look up if you're interested. I'd never heard of them before, and again, I'd need a medical degree to even come close to understanding it enough to put in layman's term. But besides affecting those potassium channels, they can affect your calcium channels as well, which is important component of our nervous system as well. It's kind of potassium is more of a low-voltage line. Calcium is more brain oriented,
I think.
Right. So it's basically just jacking you up all over the place. Those proteins are doing all kinds of stuff, and it's just a bad deal. And by the way, this is something you don't really hear recommended, but arterial tourniquets are beneficial in the case of all mamba bites. But don't goof around with tourniquets if you don't know what you're doing, because you can just lose an arm because.
Well,
I guess it's better than dying at some point, but you can lose an arm, a leg.
First aid wise, it's considered pretty norm now to at least use like an ACE bandage over anything bleeding or
right. Yeah, and if you get bit in the face, definitely don't tourniquet your neck.
Oh, why not? You're going to die anyway.
So the main things that you want to do if you get struck by a mamba is apply a pressure bandage, minimize the movement of the victim, and get them to a hospital ASAP. That's good advice for a suspected venomous
and
snake
hope
bite
they have,
for any snake.
And hope they have anti-venom.
Correct.
And anyone in the U.S. that's keeping any mambas because they are legal in some states. Mm. I severely advise you to take the time to invest in purchasing some anti-venom because when you go to your local hospital, if you do have an incident where you get bit, they ain't going to have it.
Right. Totally. Yeah, they be pretty common in Africa, not so
unless,
much here.
Unless there's a local zoo that has them in the zoo and happens to have your species.
Right. Yeah.
Now,
that's just lucky. We got a couple more here, but
okay.
Moving quickly. Bites from the Western Green are rare, but symptoms can start as soon as 15 minutes and you can be dead in 30 minutes. Three-finger toxins are the bad guys here again, and a bite can yield 100 milligrams. They have the most rapid-acting venom among snakes. This is a bit weird, but sometimes if anti-venom isn't readily available, tetanus shots have been administered on occasion, but anti-venom is still your best hope for survival.
Yeah.
Lastly, the Jameson's mamba. Death has been recorded within 3 to 4 hours after a bite, and the eastern subspecies venom is twice as potent as the western. They don't really know why, but the Kymoci has higher concentrations of neurotoxin 1, and that's the stuff that gives the king cobra venom a real kick. I'm sure we've heard from George during all of this, but it's a good time for any other weird stuff you ran into with mambas, because that's really all I covered was venom. So
I will tell you that black mamba venom is being studied as a painkiller.
Yeah, non-addictive.
Because it's non-addictive, and it's more potent than as a painkiller than morphine.
Yeah. That
because there is no pain when you get bit by a black mamba.
Right. And I didn't realize that this type of snake, you know, a fixed front fang, it's not like a grab and hang on and pump you full.
No.
It's grab and, you know, bite, 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 bite. They'll envenomate you all over the place, and
Staring into your eyes with those black eyes going, you're right, dead.
They're
you're
black,
dead.
Beady eyes. Yeah. And do you have some folklore? And
I do.
I knew it.
Yeah. Oh,
no Cyptrids?
No, because the one they had was actually some kind of a lobster fish cross. And it's just, it didn't fit.
Sounds right. Good.
Hey-o.
Yeah.
Finally found one that didn't fit.
Now, in African mythology, the black mamba is often seen as a symbol of danger and death, representing entering the unpredictability of life and the need to repent, to respect nature's power. It is revered for its speed, stealth, and cunningness in Zulu culture, and it symbolizes the importance of humility and respecting nature's balance, teaching us to live harmoniously with our surroundings and acknowledging our vulnerabilities.
Did Gaia write that?
Also in Zulu
shit, right?
Folklore.
When does Captain Planet jump in here?
It represents the duality of life and life-giving and death-dealing aspects. In West Africa mythology, the snake is associated with the goddess Mabu, who embodies creation and destruction.
Mm. Well, these things definitely embody destruction.
Yeah. Now, the green mamba is linked to the goddess Mbombo by the Xhosa people of South Africa, and they believe she protects them from evil forces, ensuring prosperity through rainfall and fertility of the land.
Mm.
And that's what I got.
Nice. Well, snakes are a little phallic, too, so, you know, I guess you'd
get yeah, I'll give you a phallic, too.
Fertility stuff going on. You got anything, George?
Behavior-wise? Did you ever watch that show? It was on for a while, called Snake City.
Uh-uh.
The guided snake rescues in South Africa.
I did, yeah.
I didn't.
Well, I watched one of his YouTube ones last night, and they went to a kind of a dilapidated, like an abandoned factory or something, and the people that lived there thought they saw a big snake go underneath this slab. So they were breaking the slab of concrete off to try to get a snake out, and they finally could see it with looking in with a flashlight, and they're sticking their face down in this crack where this, where they, he believed it was a mamba. And when they got it out, it was like 13 feet long, not exaggerating. Ooh. And it was as big around as his forearm. How he ever kept it off of his face, I don't know. Huh. I mean, I think it must have been a little cold is the only reason that it
he
didn't.
He was in the pool.
That it didn't get him in the face.
I will tell you that in my ventures in reptile rescues, mambas are not one of the ones I will like dealing with because they are so quick.
Right.
You can only
and
get
unpredictable.
You
they're not scared of you.
You can't get
no,
far.
Not,
you can't get far enough away from their face when you have their tail.
Right. Yeah, yeah. They're kind of a fast twitch mover. You know, that's they're not slow animals. And I've got a little bit more on that. Threats. All of our mambas today are listed as least concern. But if you're in Africa, we finally have a species that's a threat to you versus the other way around. Deforestation would obviously be bad due to their preferred habitat, and more power to anyone that wants to go out and mess around in those trees because I'm out. And speaking of, we never really jumped down that road, but, you know, a lot of places where people are dicking around in trees, that's where you run into green mambas. You're out in the middle of nowhere. You're freaking dead.
And Jameson's, too.
Mm-hmm. Their number one predator is the mongoose, which is immune to their venom, as is the honey badger. So, you know, you can run into some pretty cool fights. And I started thinking about this because of our last bird that we covered, but does the secretary bird ever run into mambas? Because they're in Africa.
I would think so.
Probably yeah. Black mambas, yeah.
Right. So I was wondering how common it would be, and I forgot. I was actually going to look to see if I could find a video of a secretary bird fighting a mamba, but...
Doing the mamba shuffle?
Yeah, I totally forgot. But
actually, I think I saw one because the snake that it was stomping on was that right color.
Huh. And that would make sense.
And they live in that kind of environment, yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, so a secretary bird, pretty safe. Yeah. Like, I would imagine, you know, when you're tromping around through the weeds, you're going to kick out a mamba every now and again, you know? So it probably depends. I don't know if they're immune to the venom. They might even be. So
I don't think they are.
Birds probably not. Probably not. Yeah, some mammals get that adaptation. But anyway, I digress. I got some interesting stuff today. The bite of a black mamba is known as the kiss of death for good reason. Black mambas have an envenomation rate of 100%, and you would be one of the luckiest people on the planet to get a dry bite from one of these bad boys. And that's when a snake bites you, a venomous snake that doesn't envenomate you, that's called a dry bite. Common in some snakes, not at all in mambas.
Well, like when I described the kid getting pricked by the dead skull of one.
Right. Yeah, and depending on how much of a dose you took from the mamba that bit you, receiving anti-venom is no fun either because it can take 10 to 30 vials of anti-venom to get you to a place where you're possibly not going to quit breathing.
The happy breathing place.
Right, exactly. The place where you can sustain life. There are job openings to measure how fast they are, and you can apply at don'tbeadumbass.com if you're looking for a job out there, everybody. The Guinness Book has them down at 12 miles per hour for short distances, but they also know how many watermelons a human can smash with their head in 1 minute. So take it for what it's worth when you're looking at Guinness for a source of any information.
11 to 12 is what I got for most.
I got 10 for a short burst. Yeah. Right. With a third of its body off of the ground.
Yeah. And yeah, it was funny because that was what most of these articles said, is the speed is a really hard thing to pin down because nobody wants that job of measuring how fast a mamba can come towards you.
Because that means
you.
They're chasing you.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And just as one last general thing, how does a mamba gauge what it can eat? Well, anything that's four times the size of their heads. So, yeah, that's a good. They use their heads to gauge how big of an animal they can eat. So,
otherwise, it just bites you and looks at you like, "Well, you're gonna die."
You just pissed me off.
Yeah, you don't want to look in them beady eyes.
I'm not gonna eat you, but sorry.
Yeah, and that's also a part I skipped on. Our characteristics was, you know, there wasn't much special about eyes in this particular case.
No.
A couple of them had a little bit of yellow colorizations and whatnot to their irises, but other than that, they're black, beady snake eyes.
Judging by just the fact they're a little bit bigger, I'm guessing they have lower light.
I do think, though, don't they have round pupils?
Yes, they are diurnal for the most part.
Right. So that is a weird thing. They don't really have snake eyes like the...
Well, that's more in your nocturnal one.
Right. The slits that you'd expect to see. Because we talked about slits. The fact that, you know, you're also
we
looking...
We like slits.
Yeah, right. And we cannot lie. But that's more of like a range of vision thing also. So yeah.
I don't like slits malt liquor, though.
Slits. Do you like the Blue Bull? We're never going to drink Blue Bull slits on this show. Guaranteed. I've already banned it.
I'm not going to go there either.
I would drink King Cobra malt liquor, though, because it's been a long time. And
It's been a long time. It's probably been about 30, 40 years.
I've never experienced it.
We're going to have to find it.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's probably it, unless anybody had anything.
I got nothing else.
Me either. The sriracha peas, fantastic. Great alternative to wasabi. I don't know that they're really driving me wild or anything, but I'd probably throw a solid 7 on them.
I feel wild. You
know? Right.
I don't know. I'll give them an 8.
Yeah, if you like spicy, crunchy snacks.
I like spicy that's slightly sweet.
Yeah, a little sweetness, and that comes
I kept eating them, and it's got to be an 8.
Yeah, these peas must be diabetic. They're sweet. Your pea tastes sweet. You know how that's how they used to diagnose it? They had somebody that used to taste pee, and if your pee was sweet, they knew you had the sugar.
Pee taster?
Yeah. Can I get the royal pee taster? Right. Yeah, so pretty basic snack. Good. The Guinness Zero is fan-freaking-tastic.
It is.
It pours like a Guinness.
Of the stouts we have had, this is the best.
I hate to do it, but I'm going to drop a 10 on it. It's
Guinness. You know what? On an NA stout...
Right.
I'm going to do the same thing. Yeah. I mean, the head is perfect.
Right.
It does the...
It cascades.
The cascade is awesome, and the flavor is... You'd be hard-pressed.
Yeah, I don't know.
And
it's
basically... All the ingredients are in a regular Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing new is they cold-press it to remove the alcohol.
It even looks like it on the outside of the glass.
Yeah.
Well, I think in general... really, they only need to drop the alcohol level of an actual Guinness by about 3.5% to get it down to the 0.5 that we're drinking today.
Yeah, so, it's 4.2.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, like that,
yeah.
My bad. 3.7, everybody.
Well, no, this had.
That's a baby's draft.
Actually, I thought that too, but when you look just under the zero, it says contains less than 0.5% alcohol by volume.
Fine. Whatever.
I thought that was actually a little bit misleading myself, is to use a zero and then say less than 0.5.
So. It's a wee baby's draft.
Right. It's for babies. Wee babies. And because Max didn't want any of these today, I actually managed to get my way through most of 3 cans. So... Another good reason to drop a 10 on this. It's Guinness.
You're well on your way to a Bud Light.
I know. Right. I'm going to be freaking loaded. Right. I had half a Bud Light today during our show, everybody.
All right, people.
I am ripped. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just for clarification here, if you're going to visit Africa and you go to the lower half, just don't screw around with any snakes in Africa. Just run. Like,
you've got the Gaboon viper. You've got the puff adder. Mm-hmm. You've got the rhinoceros viper.
I don't know how they do ziplining, but I ain't ziplining through no trees up in there either.
Spitting cobras. You got a lot of things that can F you up.
The only other place that could compete with that train of things
Australia.
With Australia.
And we need to get there one of these days, because that was mentioned many times. That,
brown snake sounds the scariest to me.
Yeah. Mambas.
Well, chase you kind of snake.
Right.
Yeah.
And mambas kill a lot of people, and for that reason alone, a lot of people can think that they're the most venomous, but they're not. Those are in Australia, and we'll get to them eventually.
I saw a video of the milking a big brown snake that it was like...
I got a big brown
What website were you on, George?
My brown snake.
.org.
And it,
yeah, dot NZ.
And they got like a whole shot glass of venom out of it.
Whoa.
And it was a...
Did she drink it?
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. These Guinnesses add up.
I didn't have any part of that.
All right.
All right, people.
I've seen those videos, too. More peens next week.
Peace out.
Bye. Sorry.